can't understand a variant with an E in it. That's our special kind of a variant. That's an Oklahoma variant. It's spelled V-A-R-E-N-T.
Variant.
Prediction factor is spelled prediction.
How about category?
That's, huh?
That's a category.
Generator, well, that, we don't care how. We've got the gen part right. Part gen. APV is a very strong weapon if you use it for getting parameters. At every track in the United States, there are parameters below which a horse will not win or place, and there are parameters in the high levels in which it will place a given percentage of the time and should never be left out of your exacta or trifecta. They just exist. They are there. They are a fact. Everyone at this table, without exception, I think, said to me when we talked about AP, how that thing don't work, I'm not going to use that. Everyone has said that at one time or another. So if you think you're a little bit iconoclastic about it, it's quite fine. The very ironic thing, now James Quinn and I were very good friends. He does not handicap with our method, and I don't essentially use steadfastly his qualification rules, but Michael Pozzola and I have gone over every example raised in Jimmy's books, his condition book, and won them all using APV as opposed to the longer process he uses. It's just arriving at the same destination with two different approaches. But remember, what I like to do, what you might like to do, cannot be the same thing. If we try to impose that which we find simple and easy that we do onto you, and you reject it emotionally, you're never going to be a winner doing it our way. That's why we provide you a multitude of tools, one of which will satisfy your own nature. Quinn's way is very good if combined with pace. APV will do the same job. It's amazing. Tell him, Michael, what you do with Annie Byers' book. Kill you.
After spending a few afternoons with Andy Byers' trip group, one of his trip teachers, I decided to take his book, The Winning Horse Player, and go through it. I was flush with success from using Ultra for the past few months. And I went through and did every race in that book, and Ultra had the winner in the top two. One of the most valuable tools in getting that is the APV. The second one was picking the correct pace line and using the program. The third was actually the tandem concept, which took a lot of the, and we'll get into that, we're talking about pace lines, which took a lot of trip things into consideration. But without using anything of that information, without looking at a race, without knowing anything, the methodology came up with those same horses, which were claimed that the only way you could get them was from seeing the horse that made seven moves in a race on a jockey who wasn't really trying.
In that same example, though, you did not make any corrections within the program for APV.
No, sir.
No class of that.
No, but what I did do is, in fact, in my copy of that book, which is a wonderful book, a wonderfully entertaining book, because I love, just love those stories. But I'll go and I'll write the APV right in that earnings box right there, so I know that certain horses are not to be considered at all. Some horses are going to be considered to place only. Those high APV horses which have questionable form, the low APV horses which have great form, those two are very powerful place predictors. And then pick pace lines. Using APV and using Dick Quigley's classification of the last four races, which company has been in, using those two together, and they will be a great aid in pointing to the right pace line.
Okay, just if you're going to make a rule, I wouldn't make that a rule. I do make it a rule. It's my personal rule. If you ever follow me to a track or a bookmaking establishment, the first thing you watch me do, and I don't even put it in the computer, I do it with a hand calculator. I just do the old down and dirty 60-20-10, because that's close enough for parameters. Get them all down. You're going to find some surprises, and you're going to find some horses that you were worried about that you shouldn't worry about. But before anything, know what the parameters are, as does Bob Cochran in the example race, his two things, Hawthorne and Sportsman. Sir?
Uh-huh.
We studied all three of them. In the yellow manual, we've got the study of the APV. Just a second, Doctor, I'll get right to it. APV, earnings per start, and in-the-money finishes, which are the three aspects of earnings. And we found out that the parameters of APV were more predictable, slightly more predictable than the other two, which is the only reason we use it. If the others were more predictable, we'd be using one of them. But what is working at your track is what you should be using. If you've got earnings per start as opposed to APV, then use it. But don't everybody say, well, I think I'll try earnings per start because that fell in the back room and did it. Learn how to use the tools you've got, and then maybe you want to experiment with something else. The other one, the one we used in the original manual, was a combination of the three. But, and that, of course, is very, very strong. But why go through all three processes when we found that by just doing one, you get the same result? Dr. Lerner?
For a novice who has not attended any of your lectures, don't know anything about the course, precisely what formula do you use for APV?
In our computer programs, we use 55, 25, 10. Not because that's what the distribution is, but because that tends to de-inflate the value of a place or show. We use 55, 25, 15. For parameter purposes, we just use 60, 20, 10, like it is. Because all you're looking for is a parameter. You're not trying to specify, but this track here, only the first distribution is 55, this one is 62.5. You're looking for parameters. We're not using APV to pick our horses, we're using it to eliminate those which don't come anywhere near. And it's an excellent tool once you know the parameters. If you don't know the parameters, it's worthless. Just saying the top four is marvelous, but some tracks you're going to need to know what percentage they can't go beneath. That would have broken some of the problems that Bob had at Hawthorne, where he had to include five horses every time.
One more thing, you remember that back in the late 60s, 70s, that Kelco came out with their machine.
Kelco Flash Calculator.
Yeah.
Which was just...
What did you think of that particular classification for his track?
That's fine, but the unfortunate thing about the Kelco Flash Calculator and the one that Curran did for Kalik, what was that one he did? Mattel. Mattel, he did one too. The problem was that people were now using that to handicap their horses as opposed to qualify their horses. Kelco did a marvelous job of qualifying horses. You see, once you get it down to five, we can say a win. If you get it down to five 90% of the time or 95% of the time, winning is secondary. It's the problem that most people have is they get. But what if? And they end up with 11, 12 horses sometimes in a race, and that will kill you. You have got to face the fact that you've got to get it down to five or the most six. Which, now these fellows have a trouble getting it up to five and six so they can find a place for it. So you've got to find a happy medium. Just do that. If you're going to make a rule, that's the rule. Do an APB on every horse in the race. And if you find he likes another aspect of earnings box, use it to or instead of, but try to APV first and get your rankings and your parameters. The second thing that I'm moderating here, I just want to moderate it, is form cycle. What page of those graphs am I on? Okay, they'll tell you more. They'll tell you more.
Well,
they start on
28.
There's two forms there. One is a complex graph. The other is zero and W's. The line is, what page is that on? On 29, you see just rows of zeros and W's. Win and not win. Get a rhythm there. Look at the rhythm of those horses. One of them has a practically a 1-2-2-1-2-2. He only deviates from a 1-2-2 in one instance. The other one has a 1-3-1-4, 1-4-3-1 type of thing. You can get a rhythm on these horses, and if you plot that, if you look at that, now the Purdy started this without realizing he'd done it on the pace line tapes we did. He starts at the bottom and moves up and gets the rhythm cycle of the horse, irrespective of what class it was running in. What's its rhythm cycle? When does it come into form? What's its period of when it's off form? Then go into the other factors. But you'll find every horse has a rhythm. Tonight, practice on some of the lines and look at getting the rhythm. And if you have to draw grass, that's why the big computers are sometimes greater tools than the little ones when you're learning. You'll find a rhythm. And when you say that horse is out of rhythm, it's like a band, or it's like a singer. Greatest singer in the world, if he's out of meter with the band, and he's on I Love You when the band's on Truly, you've got problems.
Well, if you can't get grass, this thing down here on 29 is just excellent. Just O's and W's, or O's and X's, or in the money, make an I. Because you may find a rhythm with an O-O-I-W. And it may just, you know, he runs in the money for it with.
It may be on E-I-E-I-O.
Another thing you can do is, what did the horse do before its last win? Or up close second.
History repeats itself.
How do you get the blocks? I mean, what is it? Position of the horse or what?
No. The highest, when he wins, I put it, that's, just look at the horses, what the horse did in the past performances, as put high as a win. Look at the rhythm, the dip. And the higher the block, the graph, the better he did in that race. The highest graphs are the wins. What are his peaks and valleys, in other words? Does he gradually rise to a win, then gradually taper off, or does he go like those Rockingham horses? Zoop-de-boom, zoop-de-boom, zoop-de-boom. You know, at Rockingham, except under the conditions when a horse changes distances or something, at Rockingham, once they've won, that's it for a while. You know this at most tracks. There's a little thing in here that if you do, you'll get a... Every racing form gives you, what, 900 races to choose. If you find in 900 races, which is what you get in a one-day card, that you only found two repeaters, two horses that won twice in a row, you can say, my track does not exactly produce a wealth of repeaters. Now, Aqueduct and Belmont, Saratoga, Hollywood and Santa Anita, you'll find that there's a goodly number of repeaters. But if you're playing a track where once they peak and win, that's it for a while, why are you going to get too excited about a horse that just won its last race? The lower the class the track, the more that the peaks and valleys are like this. And once you chart your track's peaks and valleys on a few horses, you'll be able to say, hey, that was it, he shot his wad last time up, Detroit, good example. You don't see stand playing last time winners at Detroit unless they're changing distance or doing something else drastic. So, that's usually the favorite too. This is why these smaller tracks produce these $40 and $50 and $60 mutuals in 18 and 19 with regularity. Because the public has said, oh, he won last time. Look at that outstanding performance. Let's use that one. If I were playing Rockingham, Aksarben, Detroit, Spokane,
Euladown,
Great Barrington Fair, Finger Lakes. Well, it's enough to get a horse to win, much less having expecting to do it twice. Just take a look at the form and see how often they've done it at that track. Now remember, when you're doing that, be careful you look at the distance and the track that you're taking from. Don't take one that came from Suffolk. You won at Suffolk, then won at Rockingham and say that's two wins in a row. That's not. That's one at one track and one at another. But at the same track, within a normal road racing period, you'll find that's one of the greatest things you can do for yourself. What is the instance of repeat? So one of them jumps up and bites you. That always what happens when you tell someone this, like it did with these lovely people from New Hampshire.
The first time they notice that, what does the horse do? He repeats. But they're smart enough to say, hey, that was an exception. If we play the rule, we're going to do better than playing the exception. Right? It worked, didn't it? Opened your eyes. And it's such a simple thing. And it's right there in front of you. You don't need a computer. Any fellows contribute to something on form cycles? Go ahead, please. Michael's pretty good at it. If he isn't, he'll make something up.
My favorite thing about form cycle, next to this thing about the wind, the rhythm of the wind, is taking a look at the recency, at how the horses have been running, the layoff patterns, for example. This is something which Dick Quigley points to when he talks about marking the green and the red cycle. And it's a very, very profitable way of looking. If you mark as Howard suggests, the wins and the O's, or the wins or the in the money and the O's, you'll notice some horses only will win when they have been freshened, when they come off a layoff for a month or more. Some horses love to win the second time out, the third time out. And those are very valuable patterns to look at. There are some patterns which I have noticed which have been very valuable are these. If you notice a layoff on a horse of a month or more, and that horse comes into a race and runs an extremely good couple of calls, as Howard was talking about before, this may allow you or justify going back to another pace line on a horse, because that horse may be improving, and just to take that race where it ran for a couple of calls and then fell off does not give you a representation of how good that horse may run today. I'm sure you've all noticed that a horse coming into a race a second after layoff runs much better. And there's another little pattern which has proved very profitable. In fact, I was talking with one of you last night about a horse called Waikiki Star from the opening day at Saratoga in the third, I believe it was the third race, up against an odds-on choice. This is a very interesting case, a form cycle. And if any of you have the form, you can go back and look. Three races ago, the horse had a layoff. In fact, I think shipped up from Florida. The first race that it ran off the layoff was abysmal. It was really awful. The second race, he made a wonderful rushing move. In other words, his last race. But it indicated that here was a horse, ran pretty poorly, ran then really well, but not well enough to project him as a winner. You need to go back to a good race that he ran before his layoff, as Dick Quigley was talking about. This is another aspect of form cycle, and that horse, of course, projected on the top and did, in fact, win. Another thing about form cycle, which Jim Bradshaw explained to me, and he explained it in terms of track runners. And if any of you exercise or run, and you try running full out, sprint, top speed, after not having run for a while, your muscles will be very, very sore the next day. And if you tried to run the next day, you wouldn't run up to your potential. However, the third time you ran, you got a little rest with you, and you had the conditioning that you had from that first full-out run, you tend to run much better. And very often, you'll see horses exhibiting this pattern, this thing of form cycle, that they'll come in off a layoff, run an extremely good race. The next race they will run really horribly for no explanation. The explanation which Jim has provided me with is just like a human athlete. It's muscle soreness that second time. And the third time out will often run better, so it'll give you a reason to go back to a horse. So it's very important. I know I've looked at Dick Quigley's forms. He does it on all his forms. I do it on mine. I just mark and see not only the wind patterns of the horses, but also when they do it, how that relates to when they run. It's another tool in looking at form cycles.
Okay, Bob, wind up the form cycles here. Michael's right about going back when you're using UltraScan, you go back and use another race. I tell you, no, I do it in phase three. You're making a call, you're making a judgment call, but you're projecting improvement into this horse.
you look so closely at the matchups of the velocities rather than just the rankings on ultrascan or what have you. So I use the last race if I'm going to project improvement of that. And all I do is eliminate the beaten length. I'm making the winner in that race, and I actually use the last race. It'll give you a closer matchup in phase three as to what he's actually going to run today.
I want to get that point. You mean that this, you think the horse is improving?
If I made a call,
he finished, say he had two good fractions, right, and then he 15 weights at the end.
Right.
You would do at the end, make him the winner?
I make him the winner of that race when I put him in the computer. That's correct. In other words, I'm projecting that if he runs that race today, but he finishes the last quarter day, he would have won that race.
But he remembers that's what he did. Don't do that and forget you did that.
No. You've got to be careful. You're making a call here that can be dangerous. If you're wrong, you're going to eat it. That's for sure.
Right. Instead of going back to what you think is his best pace race 90 days ago.
Exactly. Now, the reason for doing that is quite enough. With ultrascan, go get another race.
Yeah, I'm talking about phase three.
In phase three, the reason I do that is Tom Brohmember does the daily variants. They're very accurate, and I'll get an almost perfect picture of what this race is going to be run at today. But that's the judgment call on my part to project that improvement. You've got to be careful with that. I warn you.
In all this stuff we're talking about right now, page 10 is the start of it that Howard is really worked on and put it into what he calls pure ease. And you can use the pace of the race, pace of the horse, and get the velocities and pinpoint this stuff. And it looks complicated, but it's exactly what Michael's talking about. Only this way, you're not going to look at it by beaten links. You're going to know the exact velocity that the horse ran the first two fractions in. And is that too fast for him? Is that going to tear him up because it was real fast? Or was that length off, half a length off, done on a fairly easy velocity compared to what he usually runs? You see how it works? And it's a great tool, pace of the race, pace of the horse. It makes matchups, it solves condition problems, it's just a tremendous tool, and the people that don't use it are missing the boat.
Yeah, envision that to yourself, and you'll see form come to life. Now, these two things we just discussed are two things that, well, first you should do as an automatic thing, just make an ATP on every horse in the race. This is one thing where you use every horse in the race. For those who want to do something with every horse in the race, that's what you do with it. And form cycle is something you're going to have to play with if you haven't done it before. Once you've done these, make a graph or make an X's and O's or whatever you want to use, that will help you notice that there is a definite rhythm. You won't find it in one day, but you'll see rhythmic patterns and you'll learn to recognize them. Those things are for you to start to do. Now, all this leads up to the selection of the pace line. What these are tools to help you pinpoint which pace line you should use. And the fellow who has mastered pace line selection from intellect rather than from insight, because he said, when we said, hey, it'll come to you. Remember how we said, don't worry about it, it'll come to you out of the blue? He said, I don't want anything coming to me out of the blue. I don't want to know how in the hell I got the damn thing. That's Richard Schmidt. So we're going to moderate the selection of pace line, which should be of maximum interest. Now, anyone who wants to wander around and get coffee or anything, don't feel that this is so formal you have to raise your hand. We won't break for coffee, but it's there.
I don't want to see you guys leaving, though.
Mr. Schmidt is talking to you back.
Not rude.
You're going up left.
Werner Schmidt.
I think if I kind of point this thing away from you, maybe I won't.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, I want to tell you right off, there are two ways to pick lines. There is the right way, and there is the wrong way. Now, I'm going to talk for a few minutes about the right way, then I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mr. Pizzola, and he is going to give us a few minutes on the wrong way, the quick face line. You may have seen us up here this morning, giggling and laughing, nudging each other. What we were doing is comparing styles of pace line picking. And Michael uses an ultrascan Eastern kind of pace line, and Bob and I use a phase three Western kind of pace line, and they are really very different. And I'm going to get Michael actually to talk about that. New York track, because I don't think that we would do as well. And one of the differences, in the last Hollywood meet, it lasted 2.5 months, and we had not one day of rain. Not one off track the entire meet. In the last 20 years, I don't think they've had a day of rain at Del Mar. And so we tend to use real recent lines, almost always. But I understand it's a little different, though, back here. Just a little bit, huh, Michael? Yeah, the wrong way.
And we don't eat avocado on our pizza.
Anyway, Howard has the 2-hour cassette tapes available on picking pace lines. And one of the things he said that I remember from it is that when you've done it enough, the right pace line kind of looms up off the page at you. And I have yet to have many of them loom too much. But it is correct. The right pace line tends to just step off the page and says, here I am. And I began to realize that when I began to help other people, and we just pulled down an old form, and I said, well, here's a race I skipped. But I'll run it as an example. I go zip, 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 and mark 5 contenders in pace lines and take 30 seconds to do the whole thing. I won a tremendous percentage of those races. I was always flabbergasted because I'd always wanted to, and we're not going to win this race because I'm not taking any time. Zip, 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 zip. And amazingly enough, that worked. Worked pretty well. It only works for you, and it only works for your track and your particular area. You've got to learn your track very, very well. And unfortunately, the bad news is the only way to learn how to pick pace lines is to pick pace lines. And I'm not talking about 10 races or 100 races. I'm talking thousands. I don't mean thousands of different races necessarily. Maybe the same race 10, 15, 20 times. I have done that with a race that I bet and lost. And it is very, very painful to sit and go over a race remembering that closer catching you in the straight and knocking you down, remembering that money that you just threw away. That can be very painful, and a lot of handicappers want to turn the page, say it's a new day tomorrow, we're going to get them tomorrow, positive mental attitude. Well, that's all well and good, but if you don't go back and find your mistake, you're in trouble. And you not only make the mistake in the winner, you also make the mistake in the horse that you bet, because you may have chosen the pace line wrong there. When I talk about running it 15 times, I didn't try 15. I just moved the pace line on one horse 15 times. I moved this one here and this one there and this one there and try to get the right combination. I may need to degrade one horse and upgrade another. It's a very intricate process because every time you change one line, you have to run the whole race again. And that is a pain. It's one of the reasons I really think the computer will help you. Because that's something, at least I simply can't do on a calculator. There's not enough hours in the day to run each race 10 times or 15 times trying to find out where you made your mistake. You'll just go nuts. But when I first started, I had a lot of trouble finding contenders. Whole lot of trouble. But my pace line selection was never too bad because I had been computer handicapping for a couple of years. And in every kind of mechanized handicapping process, everyone has discovered that averaging pace lines does not work. And there is a little section in one of your manuals that mentions you might try it, but it's dangerous. That has been revised. Eliminate dangerous, make it suicidal. Don't average pace lines. It's a great temptation. And when Bob said, you know, to answer your question, he gives it a zero, that's maybe once a month, once a week at the best. This is a real exception. This is not something that you do today. Don't be playing with these pace lines that much. And the way to learn it is to take the races, the winning races, and sit and look at them a little bit. but particularly your losing races, and just go through them and go through them and go through them until you either win it, or you're just simply convinced it's one of the 7% that the methodology won't get. It's one of those horses that you just can't you can't hit. So you shine it on. Okay, let's see. I even made notes here. Let's see. I guess I was going to ask Michael to say a little bit about Eastern pace lines. And,
can I say something?
Well, you certainly let the gentleman on the end.
Get some of these that Bert or Michael did out of your book and ask you if you would pick any other pace line than the ones they did.
Or why they did pick that pace line, or whatever.
I wanted to refer to what Bob said about projecting his horses, the winner in the phase three methodology. One of the things that will keep you from getting burnt when you do that after practicing is to be sure that the horse has a high enough APV. This will save you from time to time. If he's got a low APV, you'll probably get burnt. But if he's got an excessive APV, then you'll come out okay.
You're creating a winner here. You really are. You're saying this, you're lying to your computer and you're lying to yourself. And that's a very dangerous thing to do.
See, I learned how to pick pace lines all over again in these past few months. Now, I had been using phase three for years, and I loved making energy numbers every day, percentage early and late. I would do race to race as I watched them. I was fascinated with the figures. And then it dawned on me back in Laurel, the last seminar we had, was that the two men who I've seen do more with picking exotics, picking winners more consistently, had the same kind of exotic proficiency that I had in betting to win, were with a good doctor and the fellow with the hat to my left. And they were both relying on UltraScan. So I said, well, let me go back and see and attempt to master this. And I feel that there's just there's a slightly different approach which I needed to take. Now, the insights which Dick has on his pace line selection is due to the regression that he did going back over these races. This is the only way. Here's another rule which I might offer, as well as doing APVs in every horse, is that another thing you might do is always go back and look at the races that you've lost to see how you could pick that up. That is the way to get proficiency in pace lines, because after a while you will see exactly why and exactly why you don't. What my regression has shown me in the last few months is that I was being much too rigid in my pace line selections. I would get locked into one of those top two races, and I needed to just kind of loosen up a little bit. Now, in the what Dick and Bob were telling me, Bob Purdy, was that in Southern California, they don't have any shippers. They don't have that problem that we do here. Here, if you play a track like a Monmouth or a Garden State or Atlantic City or the Jersey tracks, the shipping problem is a tremendous issue to deal with, and that has to enter into your pace line considerations. But the thing that I will emphasize again and again is if you do regression, you will find these things that will work for you, and then it's no longer us sitting up here saying, well, this works, try this, but you will know it because it works from your work, from what you have done. Now, I'm a little creative in my pace line selection. Bob Purdy calls it crazy. Okay. But I have a position and it works for me. It won't work for someone like Dick, who is more analytical than I am. He really is, and we kid each other, but he has tremendous analytical insights. As Howard said, Dick resisted the idea that the pace line will come off the page and you say, yes, that's it. I don't have any why for it, but I've been doing this for a few years, that's it. But there have to be reasons. That's a perfectly valid approach, and Dick is an extremely good player. My approach is different. It's, I will look at a horse, and if he's qualified, if he's in his class, if he's in some kind of form, I will tend to look at a good race for the horse. Whether that race is, I much prefer a recent race, I may have to go back sometimes on a horse, and I'm not afraid to go back. I will go back because I know I've only got four or five contenders. Number one, very important, first two steps, classifying and looking at the form cycles. And then I rely on the program that we have to compare. Remember that in pace line selection, the whole key was presented on the very first page or the very first thing that Howard ever presented to his to clientele, and that is the Blue Manual. The methodology was called pace, form, class. Those are the three issues. What we do when we pick our pace lines is we have already dealt with the issues of form and class, and this computer is the one we use. Then we turn pace over to our little handy-dandy computers and work with that. But you must deal with these two issues first. So yes, I love winning exotic bets. It's very profitable, and my sense is that you can do that with either UltraScan or basically, it doesn't much matter what program you have, but your pace line selection is crucial on that. And the other area which we're going to get into in a bit is excuses, and this ties into form cycle a little bit. When you projected a form cycle and you expect a horse to improve and he doesn't, there are any number of excuses which you can look at why a horse has not run up to his capability. So it's kind of odd for a guide in the world in New York and a very hard-headed Phase 3 user now to be selecting pace lines in a more free and easy-going way, California style. And to hear the Californians here, at least Bob and Dick, being very, very rigid and tight, but I guess it's like
you
all
the real pace line back at home, too.
Tom Brown. Tom and I will go, we went out to, when we had the seminar in Santa Anita, we went out to Del Mar together, and we...
We'll go to Del Mar and San Luis, Santa Anita.
Oh, San Diego, I'm sorry, that's San Diego. All these, California, if you look at a map of the country, it's to the left somewhere, San Diego, San something. We were in San Diego doing a seminar, and we went to Del Mar together, and Tom looked at my pace line selection, and he just shook his head. He said, no. We came up with the same horses in virtually every race from two wildly different approaches. Remember that there is no wrong pace line, there is no right pace line. That's a moralistic judgment which you must put aside. There's only predictive and non-predictive pace lines. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you won't. Jeff has been up for a while.
No big deal. So far, you don't like this. The nearest thing I can get, aside from the information that we got initially, about whether he's got the class, whether he's got the ATVs, et cetera, whether this is a horse or not, we're going to look at, period. All right, that's number one. I'm still not clear at all on pace line, selection of pace line. And when given an example, you got this book, The Second Race of Belmont.
Okay, which page are you working with?
64.
69. This is one of Bert Main's races, no doubt.
I don't know.
Okay.
This race was won by Mike Richard. And going through the selection of a baseline, which I've just kind of been sitting here mentally.
Excuse me, which horse are you looking at now? Okay, fine.
That was the winner of that race.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to assume that the line drawn through the pace line is selected. That's one of the
sprint portion of that race.
It's the sprint portion, the internal fractions of that second race back.
All right. Well, this is where I'm starting to fall apart because my first inclination is look at this horse is okay.
Okay, this is an excellent point, and it's an excellent example. And if you turn to your manuals, this is a really good one to look at. Page 69 is the second race of Belmont.
Let me preface
that. Go ahead, Bert. Yes, your call.
This was from 4th of July, and a crazed police lieutenant friend of mine in Albany had talked me into learning how to play the snare drums because he had a bagpipe and talked to a bunch of other crazed police into learning how to play the bagpipes so we could have a pipe band. So the Albany police has a pipe band. Well, we had our third job ever, marching in the 4th of July parade in a little town called Berlin, which is over in Columbia County, or Rensselaer County, across the river from here. This was the 4th of July. I got the form early, rushed home and madly looked at some base lines and threw some stuff together, didn't take a whole lot of time, and went off to the parade. And if you turn the page, you see what the mutual was on this one. When I called in the next day to my phone account, they gave me the numbers, and I said, let me give you my account number again, please. Because I, this same day, I had a $27 winner and a $15 or $17 winner. And my, you know, when you're playing with a $50 bankroll, and they tell you that it's something like three times what you thought you had in there, you know, I thought, oh, clerical error. And as a cleric myself, I felt a little bad about the concupiscence, I think is the word. The greed welled up within me as I thought, well, it's a bookkeeping error, but maybe I'll, you know. And then I asked to be transferred up front. The operator up front will give you the results. And she gave me the results, and I fainted. And I went back, actually, and looked at this and tried to figure out how I could go so grossly wrong as to have had this so easily. One of the things that I frequently do pick a very, very recent baseline, and I kind of wanted to get into a rebuttal as far as how much difference there is between West Coast and East Coast, and I thought it was interesting, Michael said, when he and Tom Brohammer went head-to-head on picking baselines, they ended up with the same horses, because that was my experience. I did all of these on UltraScan, and Howard had said, we want copygraphs for these, and so I said, go. Thinking, you know, long priced horses, well, that's ultra scan plus variant, you know, it's this thing that pulls in these wonderful long prices. I went back and I did rule of thumb adjustments. I did 0.35 per half furlong and 0.08 per point of daily racing form variant where needed. Okay, nothing exotic as far as doing, I didn't go back and do the accurate, the real, the right, correct, you know, I just did the rule of thumb things and they all came out the same anyway. I still would have the $47
mutual.
That's
the problem here. That horse's internal factor.
This is the reason why I selected that. I loved that first the sprint portion of that route race. And that's, you know, that was one of those that I was doing it so quickly my subconscious mind looked at that, and it may not have loomed up, but it certainly emerged.
Now for the purpose now. Wait. For the purpose of
baseline.
What better pace line would you pick? Okay. No, and I'll tell you what, looking at the, if you just look at it very quickly, that's why he was, you know, that's why he paid $47.60 in the first case, because you look at it very superficially and you say, no, not really. Now, first thing, let's take it step by step on this horse and take a look. Notice in the right-hand side, up by its earnings box, Bert has jotted in 1.16. Means this horse has 116% of the purse value. In other words, it has earned its money in races as good or better than this one, so it's in its class. Now we have to attend to the question of form. Is this horse in form? Well, the best clue we have about this is its last race. And at the very, just looking at the very surface of this race, which was run relatively recently, there are three horses in this race from that last race. Mama Kaba, who almost won the race, My Princess, the horse that we're talking about, and Romeo's Mistress, who finished fourth in that race. And why is it, well, I'm not going to deal with tandem concepts now, because we don't need to get into this. There are at least two excuses for this horse's last race. Excuses are very, very important part of pace line selection. The first thing, and you don't have to be a genius to get this excuse, you look on the right-hand side, the extreme right side of the pace line of the last race, it said race wide. And there's also another little clue there, 14. There are 14 horses in that race at a 7-furlong sprint at Belmont. And the horse raced wide enough for the comment maker to make a comment. This horse raced wide. Now look how it raced wide. It broke, if you'll notice, from the 10 post, and it broke 10th. Notice that this is not a characteristically bad break. This horse is not, it's not a champion breaker, but it certainly doesn't break that badly all the time. And then he ran not too far off the pace for those first two calls, 3.5 lengths, and then 3 lengths for the first two calls. There's enough there to tell Bert, I mean, I'm sure, correct me if I'm wrong, this pace line, you just said, let's look at those internal fractions.
Yeah.
But what we're doing now is an illustration of the horse you picked, looking at it analytically. So we've got two excuses. One, the break. The second, the post position. The third, that there's a comment, they race wide. There's another indication. That race was a 7-furlong race.
The race today is at 6 furlongs. Notice that this horse is good races. If you look at how he did in the mud back on the 22nd of February, he finished only 3/4 length back at 6 furlongs. This is where its other good race was. And the pace line that we selected was the internal fractions of a 6 furlong segment of a race. So we went back there. The horse was in form. It's in class. And this is what bird selection would be for the most predictive pace line.
Please fast forward and turn over.